operating just comes from the millage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the CAT also charges a fee to ride the vehicle, so there is some money there.
That ain't enough.
No, I know it's not enough, but it is some.
Yeah, the recovery, yes, farebox recovery is very limited, actually.
Like, do I
work up
to it?
I think it's less than that.
Yeah, it's less than that. But anyway, at least they do it, you know, that's fine. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's just because our area has expanded in population, with like elderly population, people with disabilities, so it seems like the demands for the paratrans services that keeps on growing. And the CAT has tried to be divert people to take the regular bus, but still this is more convenient for people with disabilities.
It's okay, I'm in favor.
I think of the two, but just as information, as a person who uses CAT, maybe some of you don't, but I do notice this. I've noticed that frequently the way if you pay the fare, that machine is often, on the bus that I ride, not working. So CAT needs to do a better job of maintenance equipment so it can actually collect. You say, well, they're not collecting enough money. They're not making a big enough effort to collect the money because oftentimes, that, you know, they're not in a position to collect the money. It isn't people aren't willing to pay something. Maybe if they pay, everyone who paid, would still not be near enough to carry the, you know, the project. But the point is, they're not collecting even that money because oftentimes the equipment is not in a condition to accept the money.
Really?
So, you know, I've had coming on the bus, 10, 15 people getting on the bus and saying, you know, don't pay, sit down, the machine's not working.
How often have you been exposed to this actually happening?
I would say about 8 or 9, 12 times a year.
Oh, year?
Wow.
And it's not always the same bus.
Uh-huh.
Or the same line.
So it is
once a month.
As much as once a month?
That's but again, that's not really a big dent in the revenue, but I'm saying, you know, it doesn't help the revenue picture to have equipment that, you know, won't allow you to accept the money that people are willing to pay or required to pay.
Yeah.
But so we have a motion to, so you're recommending that we approve this, right?
Yeah, we recommend that you move forward with this so that the CAT endorse the proposed TIP amendment so CAT can start to apply for the funds.
Is that the full extent of the TIP amendments? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's just CAT then, huh?
It's just CAT, yes.
I move that we approve the recommendation and approve the recommendation.
I second.
Okay, any other discussions on it? All in favor of the motion, signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? No. Okay, the motion passes. Okay. 2018 Unified Planning Work Program. Staff report.
Yeah, it is time for us to develop the...
Is the microphone on?
Oh, no.
Thank you. Oh, it's not on?
Hold on, it'll be on.
I don't know, sorry, this coffee so much, I think I might get done with something.
How about now?
It's on.
It is on.
Okay. Yeah, the Unified Planning Work Program, we presented this to you before. This is for fiscal 2018, which starts on July 1st of this year and ends on June 30th of next year. Basically, it outlines what the staff will do in the next year, in that fiscal year, and how much money is budgeted in that task. So I'll just go through the table of contents over here so you can see. Normally we do program coordination, operation administration, and these are just to just keep the MPO running. Training and professional development, that's for us to attend the webinars, conferences, equipment supplies, contracts and grants and unified plan work. These are just to maintain this administrative work that the staff does. And then public involvement, the CEC is part of the community outreach and education. We formalized the public involvement process. And then remember, Jane was talking to you about the participation plan as one of the guiding document for the community outreach and education. And I talked to you about Title VI, is how to involve the minority population, elderly population. So that those are just what we do. They just outlines what staff does. and we will do data collection since we are going to update our 2045 long-range transportation plan, so we will start to do socioeconomic data development for the base year, I think probably 2015, and the projection year 2045, and then also and Jane does the bicycle and pedestrian count collection each year, so that's under data collection. And Stephanie was doing the traffic impact analysis with the MPC, the developmental services. So when you have a proposal from the developer, you know what is going on. And if they generate enough trip, you want to make sure that the roadway is going to accommodate it. So that's under data collection. And system planning, you probably already know that we are updating the congestion management process. That just identify where the congestion locations are and then develop strategies to address those. And paratransit transit planning, and mostly by CAD, but we are coordinating with CAD to do a lot of the planning. Model development and applications also in support of the long-range transportation plan. And freight planning, transportation improvement program, long-range transportation plan, and we will talk to you about these. So these would be all of the activities that the staff will be doing. So basically, what we do next year, we just follow this. So like, I'm attending a CEC meeting today. I attend a CEC meeting for 30 minutes, so I charge my time to the community outreach education, and then we get reimbursement from Federal Highway Administration and GDOT. So basically, this just lays out the groundwork so that we know what we are trying to do, what we're going to accomplish in the next year, and how much money that we're going to budget for that task.
What if you went over 30 minutes? You are charging another count?
No. I mean, it just, if the meeting lasted for 1 hour, I charge 1 hour to it. Oh. Yeah, so it just, Federal Highway Administration Atlanta office always wanted us to divide it up into all of these. Actually, I think everything like administration can be in supportive of the long-range transportation plan, short-range transportation improvement program, but they want us to divide this up into all of this. And they also wanted to do a 30-day public review before we present this draft document to you. So we actually, I actually finished the draft in December, early December, and give them 30-day minute to comment. So if you open and you can just see, I highlighted all of the changes because they provided us the comments and we have to provide the responses and also how to incorporate the comments. So I highlighted all of these in a different color so that it's easier for them to check whether we have incorporated their comments, and also easier for the CEC and all of the advisory committees and appeal board to see what additional information we added. So basically, this is the work program of the MPO staff for the next year. So let me just open up one specific task so that you can see. So this is what we would do under program and coordination. So we would do this and this. And this is the budget we have.
I can't read that. What's the bottom line on the budget?
It's just an estimate. It's just an estimate how much time and we will spend on this task.
That's just the budget for that task.
Just the budget for this task.
Oh, okay.
Like we will I attended the GDOT District 5 pre-construction meeting this afternoon. That will be counted towards this budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
Want to tell them what the total budget?
Let's see, because we get the funding are mostly, this is for the MPO operation, so the funding are mostly coming from the PL funds, planning funds. Let's see, planning funds, which is this one. FHWA formula, PL funds, so they have Federal Highway Administration, they have a certain pot of money for planning, and then they divide it up into, and gave it to GDOT, and GDOT divided up by population. So like Atlanta will get the most of it, of course, and then we get some of those. So we get some of that. For us, next fiscal year, we're gonna have like $340,000 for a PL. And then the MPO, remember we talked about the MPO membership dues? the local governments, and they will provide the local match. So the total, including the match, would be like $425,000. That's for the planning grant. And also, we get some money from the Federal Transit Administration, administered through GDOT Intermodal. So that's the transit grant, 5303. We get about $122,000 of that. And GDOT provides 10% match, and our membership dues will present 10% membership dues. So the total TR budget is $152,000. So the total budget for the next year would be $577,000, just to support the operation of the MPO. So
is this on the online, so I can pull it up
on the website? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I'll do that then.
And when you go to the website, you open the CEC agenda.
Yeah.
It's the draft document. So you can see that. Particularly, I think for the CEC, you want to check the community outreach indication, whether the information contained over there does match what we do, and also in terms of what CEC does. So I mean, you're welcome to review the whole document and provide comments to us.
I'm just nosy.
Yeah. I mean, we welcome your nosiness. Yeah. Basically, just covers what staff does and what the budget is for the staff.
The majority of the budget is what, paid by Savannah or Chatham County?
No, the majority of the budget is the federal planning grant. And the local governments provide the local match. So we actually, I see probably the majority, yes, that's Savannah and Chatham County, because the membership dues, remember, was based on the population.
Mm-hmm.
So your percentage of the population. So the local governments and the Richmond Hill. We have a calculation. So I don't remember the percentage, yes, but it's based on population.
The Georgia Port is still refusing to pay their dues, right?
They are not a member. They are not an MPO board member. We have invited them to come back to be an MPO board member, but they refused. Because they can get whatever they want directly from the governor.
All so, of that hassle with that clown up in Atlanta, and then nothing changed, did it?
No. FHWA has been pushing us to get the GPA back as our MPO board member, but GPA declined.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah, they didn't even have to go through GDOT, so they just go to the governor, and the governor can direct GDOT to give them whatever they want.
Are all the municipalities and other entities, are they paying other than the port? Are they paying?
The port doesn't pay.
No, I heard that. Are the other entities, are they? Municipalities.
Other than the port.
Are they other than the port?
Other than the port, the municipalities.
Yes, are they paying?
Yes.
They are paying.
Yes. But we started to do this. When did we do that? Like member attendance? Like if the county employee attended the CEC meeting or TCC meeting today, and we can count that as their payment, towards their payment. So that will reduce their overall check, because their staff attended our meeting like for 2 hours, so we calculate, we subtract that amount.
And you see a lot of participation because of that? Do they come because of that? That it's motivation for them to come? Do they come?
Yeah, one of the reasons is, yes, motivation for them to come.
But so, do they come, in fact, come?
No, some of them don't.
Some of them don't, yeah. Some of them they do, yeah.
What about motivation?
Yeah, but that's... If you attended the MPO board meeting, like your chairman has attended the MPO board meeting, so that's what the FHWA insisted, that we count that towards their payment, so that the overall check will be reduced in that. Yeah. So for this UPWP, basically, we welcome you to review the document, provide us the comments, but mostly just endorse the document to the MPO board so that we can just move on. Because after the adoption of this, and then they will start to develop the contract, so we have the contract, and then we can do later steps.
Any other questions, comments? So the motion that you want is to is just accept the report?
Just endorse it to the
endorse
board,
it.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do I hear a motion to accept? Endorse, rather.
I do that. I so move.
I'll second.
Okay. All affirmatively say aye.
Aye.
Any bills? Okay. Passes unanimously. See, you should have been here. We gave the vice chairman a raise. It didn't pass. Okay, status report. Surface transportation block grant funds.
Yeah, we talked about this. Did we talk about this with CEC before?
No, I don't remember.
I don't recognize it.
Okay.
In the minutes, there was a little bit of something. But
we might have mentioned it. Remember, we have a certification review.
What? I'm sorry.
Well, we have the federal certification review. The Federal Highway Administration advised us that we need to do a call for projects for the MPO-controlled dollars. We normally get $4 million of a Z230 funds. We talked about a lot about Z230 funds. So we used to, what we used to do is, like, Chatham County wants to request that money for their project. And the city of Savannah wants to request some money for that project, and Tybee wants to request some project. We accommodate those requests on the first to come, first to serve the basis. But now, the Federal Highway Administration is saying, no, we cannot do that. You have to do a competitive project selection process. So for the development of the next TIP, which covers fiscal year 2018, 19, 20, and 21. I calculated we might have about $13 million for available for projects. So we have to do this call for projects. We send the call for projects out on January the 3rd, and the due date is tomorrow. So far, I haven't received any applications yet, but I know something is on the way. I know the city of Savannah is going to probably send something about Project Rain. They will need some money on Project Rain. Chatham County supposedly will have some projects, but I haven't seen them, so I really don't know. So after we receive the applications tomorrow, and I will check to make sure they meet all of the pre-screening criteria, like they have to provide 20% local match. Their project have to be consistent with our long-range transportation plan. And if they're already matching like TIP project, it'll be better. I think Project Drain would match that. And then we ask them to require minimum $200,000, because if it's less than $200,000, it's not even worth it to just go through the federal environmental process. So we'll just check all of those. And then if they meet all of the screening criteria, we'll send them to all of the TCC members, and they will screen all of the projects that based on the scoring criteria. And then they send the scores back, so MPO staff, like myself, will just compile the scores, and then the TCC ranks all those scores, and then ranks the projects, and then we have a prioritized list of the projects to be funded by Z230 funds. So if we can accommodate more projects, that's fine. But if we cannot, and we have this project list, so if the first project is completed, then we can just move forward with the second project. So basically, we're just going to have this process. It's to replace the previous one, the first come, first serve.
What kind of projects are we talking about?
Currently, the Z230 projects, Z230 money is funding a lot of projects, like the Jimmy Deloach extension. Actually, I think we are funding right of way.
Right-of-way acquisition,
yes.
And, I mean, because it's not much money. That's not.
Yeah, I know.
We're fighting over.
Yeah, I know.
You can't go very far.
Yes.
But you can actually split up a project and allocate it to, like, right-of-way acquisition on one project. And
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. So depending on how much they're asking for. Yeah, currently, I think, yeah. So we have, I know Jim Deloach, we have the Z2Z money on that one. Project Drain, the rental acquisition, we have about $5 million Z230 funds on that one. And the Lesseps Avenue, we have some money on that project. I think we used to have the money on Okichi Road widening, but we, because the GDOT replaced that money with the state funds for that project, so we moved that allocation to I-16 widening.
Good. And what about Sequoia?
Yes. US 80, the bridge's replacement. Yeah.
Which bridge?
The Bull and Lazaretta Creek bridges. Okay. Right. Just the preliminary engineering.
At the appropriate time, Makota, I'd like to know the status of the I-16 widening, but I don't want to interrupt your train of thought right now.
Yeah, actually, I attended the GDOT pre-construction meeting today. I think the project manager's Latin date is supposed to be like April 2019 or something, so I'm pretty fast.
April 2019?
I have to double check that for you. April 2019 or 2018, so I have to double check for you.
Okay, that's more like it.
Yeah, that's moving really fast, actually.
So we get to see the Craig Myrtles balloon one more year.
yes.
Probably
yes.
More than that.
Yes. Well, it's a design build project, so they might have been, doing some behind the scene work. So you might see the Myrtle bloom for 2 years before you can see the construction.
Looks like they're already doing some of it on Lyons Parkway, as far as, developing into the median right there, and they get a concrete wall and stuff. But anyway.
I don't know what is going on there. I saw a lot of construction on I-16. I just don't know what. I saw they're still removing the dead trees, probably.
Okay, maybe so.
Yeah, because this project hasn't been let yet, so we cannot do anything.
I understand. Yeah. I am anxious for it to get started because it's so badly needed.
Yeah.
They got to finish 204 Georgetown so I can get out of my house first.
I thought that one is done. The 204 King George, isn't it open? I thought it's already open.
Not quite finished. They've realigned the lane, but they still need to do the overpass.
Yeah, but they opened the ramp, right?
Yeah. They've opened. They have two ramps going into town. From King George Boulevard, so that's helped. Mr. Smith get out of his house in the morning into the 204.
Yeah, because I know they opened that ramp. They also opened the divergent diamond at I-95 and State Route 21. So I already checked that one out, but I was planning to check on the State Route 2 for King George Boulevard interchange this weekend. So.
Well, I haven't even checked out the divergent diamond yet. Now, I'm up there usually a lot, but I've been out of town. So what is your opinion on that?
I was very confused, actually. It's just I think the people that going from Stuart 21 should go that way, but they're going this way. I don't know. I was still confused with that configuration.
I too want your opinion about something different. As I'm hearing, there are two models or two approaches here. There's one way you were doing things. You were told by your major funder you cannot continue this. You have to be competitive. This is what you're doing. This is showing us how you're doing this now. Mm-hmm. My question is, do you think that? Would you rather have stayed with the old way? I mean, I understand when the money says do it this way, you do it that way. There's no going back. My question is, just as an intellectual exercise, would you have preferred to continue the way you were?
I think this way is better because it's more defensible.
Sometimes it's luckily, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think this is more defensible.
Okay.
Because, the reason that the FHWA wants us to do this is because our previous executive director used some of the M-230 money on the studies, and they didn't like the studies. Nothing wrong with the studies, but they didn't like the studies. They didn't want us to do the studies. So now, if MPO wants to do a certain study, we have to submit the application and then be evaluated against the other projects. So it's more defensible. So if you have a study that has been selected, you have money to select that project, select that study to do the study. And you can see this study went through this whole process and it got selected. So it's more defensible. Like previously, they would say, Tom decided to do this. So they can just say, even if that might be the case, but give them an excuse. So this is more defensible.
I've talked to a number of people on that weekend close when they sent everybody 10 miles to for the 2195 when they closed that intersection as to how it worked out. And they were quite delighted. They said it really wasn't that bad for the weekend. Now, I'm sure some people found it irritable, and it would have been probably to me also.
I went to the FEM County Transportation Advisory Board meeting. So previously, when I went over there, the line on 021 going south on I-95, it went all the way. If you know there's a Publix in Port Wentworth, the queue went all the way over there. But this time I went, it wasn't that long. The queue wasn't that long. Mm-hmm. So it definitely improved. Sorry, something's wrong with me. So this is just the status report. And we are still, I think at your next meeting you might be updated on what kind of projects we received, what kind of projects we evaluated. But since our deadline is tomorrow, so I cannot tell you because I haven't received anything yet.
Is there some provision people missed a deadline and can somehow get in later?
I think if we haven't received anything tomorrow, we might extend the deadline a little bit.
You have to extend the deadline.
Yeah, we'll see. We haven't talked about it yet. But if we received something, I mean, somebody already met the deadline, we just have to evaluate that. But we already told people, we give them about a month to reply, so. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're down to what, the update transportation alternative projects?
Right, this is a simultaneous call for projects.
Item 5.
Now, this is a transportation alternatives funding is, in a general way, it's kind of like for bicycle pedestrian projects. But there's also other types of community enhancements, even some environmental mitigation that's eligible. So it's a little bit more restrictive than that surface transportation block grant funding that Waikato was just now talking about.
Right.
We have done a call for projects for this one in the past. This one, the NPO didn't always have control of any of these funds. It used to be, these used to be called transportation enhancements, and the state decided it for the whole state. At least in Georgia, that's the way they did it. But starting with MAP 21 federal legislation, they started requiring that the larger NPOs like us have some say in how that kind of money gets spent in their area. And part of that requirement was that we have a competitive selection process. So it's not new that we're doing a call for projects for this one. We did one in 2014, and we awarded three projects at that time.
What three were those, if you can remember, Jane?
It was Chatham County got money for the Cane Break Road path and sidewalk project, but they have since decided that they wanted to just spend some SPLOST money on that so that they wouldn't have to go through the federal process. So that money went back into our pot. CAT got money to expand the bike share system, so they're about to add 5 more stations with, that would be, I think, 40 more bikes. And then Tybee Island got some money to extend the path alongside US 80 on the old railroad bed east of Lazaretto Creek, called the Marsh Hen Trail. It would go toward the creek, and then ideally in the bridge replacement project, there would be a facility, a safe facility on the bridge so that people could actually walk and bike from Tybee Island to Fort Pulaski and that kind of thing. So Tybee Island actually decided to use local money or at least some other source as well. But so because they had some environmental sensitive issues. So that money went back into our pot as well.
So we got, how much money's in the pot?
Well, this time we're awarding $3 million. That covers whatever was given back to us in fiscal the balance we had as of fiscal year 2015, and then everything that's going to be in our TIP window out to fiscal year 2021. So what that means, though, is that we can't put all of the award into the first fiscal year because we don't really get allocated that money right away. Some of it is coming in a later year. But most of it, like $2.2 million, is actually can be programmed in the upcoming fiscal year. It also has a 20% match requirement. And because of this federal process that causes some people to give our money back to us, we're saying that if your project doesn't cost at least $200,000, you probably just don't want to mess with this funding. Because, you know, there's just a sort of an administrative sunk cost, I guess you'd say, for dealing with this money. So to make it worthwhile, you need to be sure you're asking for a good bit of money. We're following the same schedule as that other pot of money that Wycota talked about. However, our selection criteria are different because the eligibilities are different. The selection criteria are, well, federal process knowledge. How feasible is the project? You know, looking at, you know, the wetlands, the railroad crossings, those kind of barriers. Plan consistency with our plan, our long-range plans. Implementation status. So, how far along is the project? Are they asking for construction funding, or are they only going to be able to get preliminary engineering done with this money? And then we're looking at non-motorized access. So does it improve access, say bicycle and pedestrian access between key activity areas? And especially if it's between low-income areas and key activity areas. Multimodal connectivity. That's different from access in that it's looking at how it extends the existing network. It's more efficient, builds on what has been done before if the project links to an existing bike lane or path or sidewalk. The last two are tourism. Does it enhance tourism for non-drivers? That brings in some economic benefits. And tourism is now a new planning factor with the FAST Act. Safety, will it help improve safety for these alternative modes? So those are the way we're judging the projects. The eligible activities were covered in the report. So of course, construction, planning, and design of trails and bike lanes and signals and so there's a lot of uses, actually, even building a boulevard in a former interstate right-of-way or something like that, which a lot of cities are doing now. And eligible applicants are local governments, transit agencies, regional agencies, school districts. Even nonprofits now are eligible to do some things, administering some safety programs, but they're not eligible to try to build something. So our due date for these applications is also tomorrow, and I haven't received any, but Chatham County did say they're sending in something. And I know the city of Savannah talked about what they would apply for, and I assume that might arrive tomorrow. We will let you know next time.
Do you need any action?
No, this is just a status report.
Do you need action, sir?
No.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I read in the Connect about bicycles and tourism. You saw the piece where the person argues that there's a different kind of tourist who comes with bicycles. They are better educated. They spend more money. They don't compete with residents for talking spaces and so on. So stuff on the upside, you know, nothing but the downside. I'm curious, but he says that we can't really get that tourism here within the Boat Bike Trail, that you mentioned the South Brunswick community that has it, and he talks about Hilton Head and other places. Is that basically that article, is it basically, as in relation to tourism, is that, in your opinion, correct?
Yeah, there have been studies about how much money and how much these kind of tourists spend in an area. Like, I think the North Carolina Outer Banks has done, there's been a study of that area with how bicycling tourism has affected economic development. And let's see, also, yeah, it's true that we don't have very many off-road paths here. In the Queens Island Trail, you have to drive to it to get there safely. And that's not really necessarily what these tourists are looking for, because they're actually, some of them are traveling into town on their bicycle. And I've looked for those kind of vacations myself. I did that in Vermont a few years ago. And it is hard to find places to do that. I've also done a walking vacation in California, so I actually didn't use cars at all on either one of those vacations. I did use transit to help not have to retrace my steps. But yeah, there are people that look for that kind of thing, and it's easier to do it in Europe than it is in the United States.
There's really a too strong a case for tourism, the impact that bike accessibility would have on tourism, because you said in Europe they probably have this culture, so they're used to riding bicycles more so than we do, and but they have more bicycles on the streets and so on. But I'm wondering, would even a trail in the city of Savannah, a bike trail, not just a few lanes but a trail, would that really bring us bike tourists, you know, people who ride, you know, people actually, not people who have a bike on top of their car now.
Well, yeah.
Or people drive behind a car too. People do that as well. But just people actually who are going to ride a bicycle from place to place.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that I would agree that the more infrastructure we provide for that, the more of that kind of tourist we get. You know, so the first project, you know, one trail, you know, it's not going to bring hordes of them necessarily, but the more we do, the more, you know, it needs to be connected to what we've got. And so it could definitely grow as we do more. Because people already want to come. I mean, it's a shame that you can't ride your bike between Savannah and Tybee Island, because those are already places tourists want to go. And there's a certain type of tourist that wants to do it on their bike.
Well, I tell you, Tybee and Savannah separately, without getting to each one, is quite amenable to the bicycle experience, especially downtown Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine a group of bicyclists, you know, they have to, you know, they probably should, you know, vehicle their bikes into town and then stay in a hotel. They could ride all over the downtown district, which is a large district, largest landmark district almost in the country. They could, you know, and I'm sure they do to a certain extent on a very limited basis, ride their bikes around town, and then we have pedestrian tours or foot tours all the time. You see them, you know, there's people making money doing those tours.
Yeah.
Savannah Dan or whoever, you know,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know how we could access money, and you would know how we could access money to enhance that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, there are cycling groups that, you know, I've seen vans come into town with a bunch of bicycles on top. And
mm-hmm. I have too.
And so there are some touring groups that do already come here. And some of them would ride to Tybee with existing conditions, but only the bravest type of cyclist would do that. And they're probably going out on some rural roads as well. But yeah, I think having also like the amenities that they're looking for, like we have plenty of the hotels and stuff, but other communities along the path like the East Coast Greenway is the kind of thing that these people are looking for, and that goes all through these coastal counties, but in some of its rural areas, there'd be opportunities for lodging businesses along the path that there's not necessarily demand for until we make that pathway better. So,
to what extent does Savannah have dedicated bike paths in the downtown area?
Well, when you say bike paths, do you mean, does that count bike lanes, or are you just talking about off-road?
No, bike lanes. If you wanted to bike around downtown and stop at different places and do a little sightseeing, can you feel comfortable that you're in your own space, so to speak, or are you always competing with pedestrians, traffic, and carts? And
the city of Savannah has 9.1 miles of bike lanes. That includes like out on Largo Drive, and there's a little piece of Edgewater. So some of it's on the south side, but there's Washington Avenue, Price Street, Lincoln Street. And a lot of the downtown streets, the streets with squares, you don't really need a bike lane. You probably don't want a bike lane going around the squares because the bicyclist just needs to fall in line so that they're not crossing the traffic to go around the square. A lot of streets with squares are just, they're bicycle friendly as they are, if the bicyclist...
And pedestrian friendly.
Yeah, if the bicyclist realizes that they're best just riding their bike like they drive a car.
Well, traffic is very calm.
Yeah.
In a lot of streets, we're not talking Drayton or Whitaker, but you know, but there are plenty of bicyclists on those streets as well. You can sit there and just count them. But I agree. I think Savannah, that's kind of like what I was wondering. It seems like we're already there as far as downtown creating the kind of atmosphere that would attract these kind of people. But maybe it's just not enough. Maybe it's not enough of an area to do it. And you still got to get there.
And
you still have to leave. But
there's even other people that would consider cycling if the lanes were more protected. And some cities are doing a more protected kind of bike lane, like where you put the bike lane on the other side of the parked cars, like between the parked car and the sidewalk. That's one way of doing it. So some people don't feel comfortable riding in the bike lane on Price Street just because if there's a stripe there, they don't necessarily feel protected.
A lot of people are using it though, but I think that's great. I think, you know, and I think over time, once we do widenings and projects like Highway 80 to Tabby, there'll be the planning of the bike lane, even on the new bridges. There'll be planning for a bike lane. So eventually, that will come about, but I don't know if we can use that money for this because it's, you know, they're part of it, an enormously expensive project anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the bike lane on Highway 17 out near Berwick. You know, they're bits and pieces, and I think eventually it is going to become a pretty good system.
Yeah, we hope so. But yeah, some projects will happen as part of bigger.